I remember it was a Friday night, and one of the assistants told me, did you see what they say? I say, I'm going to tell my anger on social media. They say, no, you cannot.
Oh,
and I say, I can't, you'll see. And I start Friday night around 11, a war on the level of vaccination.
That's awesome.
They say, please stop, you forgot I'm a minister. I say, the weekend I'm a citizen.
Hi, everybody. You're listening to Aid Evolved, and I'm your host, Rowena Luke. In this podcast, we speak with innovators, changemakers, and activists who are working on new ways to deliver healthcare and improve lives. Today, I am so honored to be speaking with Dr. Agnes Binagwaho. Dr. Binagwaho is a pediatrician, the former Minister of Health of Rwanda from 2011 to 2016. She's been a senior advisor to the Director General of the World Health Organization, a senior lecturer at Harvard Medical School, and co-founder of the University of Global Health Equity. I could go on, but I'll leave it there. If you're part of the movement to make life better in Africa, you need to listen to this episode and people like Agnes, who aren't afraid to upset existing institutions, who represent the governments of Africa, who are the essential actor in the delivery of essential health services, and who are leading the charge toward a better future. In the conversation ahead, you'll hear from her firsthand what it feels like when technologists steal or lock away your data. You'll hear her talk about the power of data and how she used it in her work to hold herself accountable to her people and to decide on what resources to allocate where. And you'll even hear about the power imbalance that emerges when the United Nations says one thing and a country says something else. You got to stick around for the end, though, for an incredible story of how social media allowed Dr. Binagwaho to right a wrong as a civilian on the public internet faster than anything she could have done as Minister of Health. Just before we dive in, a little housekeeping. If you like the show, please connect with us on LinkedIn or leave us a positive review. And I should probably also mention that I'm going to be hitting the road for a couple of months. I'll be traveling. So I'm going to put the podcast on a little bit of a hiatus, but I will be back later this year with a whole new season and maybe even a few more surprises and announcements. Now back to Binagwaho. First, she shared a story when the hype and the promises of technology really fell flat in practice.
They were crooks in the system. People who come and sell you something that seems so good, but at the end doesn't, you know, what we call interoperability, are not operable with the system that is there already in place. So you have buy something that will be useful locally, but cannot be extended to the entire country, etc. And there are people who did so by purpose.
How would they do that?
To sell, you know, people are dishonest in all the field. It's not because you are selling a medical device that you are an honest person.
Yeah.
This taught us something, is that we need to always seek and have advisor in all the field. We doesn't have to trust. We need to, even if it's to create a group that is for a time, for 3 months. Okay. So going across the world, find the best people who can advise you on this technology. And this has also helped us to improve the technology that was proposed and to restitute to the world something that was more performing than what we found.
I asked Dr. Binagwaho if she had any specific examples of technologies that she'd worked with where she was able to open up that data, make it interoperable, and what she did to make sure that that tool really fit the needs of Rwanda at the time. She gave an example from the early 2000s when she was executive secretary of Rwanda's National AIDS Control Commission. In this capacity, Dr. Binagwaho oversaw the efforts to get ARVs, antiretrovirals, to treat everyone with HIV.
An example in early 2000, when the Global Fund started to provide IRVs to people living with HIV/AIDS, for the people to be well followed, we need to create a system where the CD4 of the patient, when the level of the virus in the blood, where regimen of IRVs, were accessible to doctors instantly. Let's say the patient is in front of me. I have the last lab result, the last medicine tech, and et cetera, and the evolution. So to have that, we had to create, to develop internet access to the health facility. And right. That's why, if you look in many places in the developing world, the use of e-tools have entered in the country to the health sector.
Yeah, yeah, even faster in some cases than North America or Europe.
Absolutely, because the health workers were known, already educated people. So add those tools to health facilities and add their people who are able to use it, were very secured and more easy than in other fields. And the specific program also had money for that. And what was good is to use the money of HIV, for example, to help manage the entire health of the people. And you just say, a person with HIV, she's a woman, she will get malaria. We will save her with very expensive drug at that time. And we lose her for malaria. So we need also to control how she will respond to malaria in case she has a malaria. This approach has helped the entire health sector to manage malaria, TB, HIV, and later on, non-communicable disease, etc.
Good to hear. What ended up happening? You mentioned that solution that wasn't interoperable, that you know had kept its data and locked it away from you. What happened with that?
32,000, you know. I think I learned the word interoperable in 2003. And that means there were other tools to manage health sector, the health information system that each health facility has. We made sure that whatever new tool we add, like even when we add a billing system with the epidemiologic management, etc., that all the system talk together. And we doesn't have to add one staff per system. That one staff can manage, at least there are two or three because there is holidays, et cetera, but make it rational and also make it linked with like a pyramid, you know, from health center to district hospital, so that the district hospital that is responsible for several health centers, 14 to 17, can the doctor who is there, the doctor was at district level, can manage and understand what happened to each patient that are in that district.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah. So this has built the health information system and using specific disease where there is money. You know, HIV is a curse, but HIV brought as a help many countries to build the health sector.
And invest in infrastructure.
Yes, invest in infrastructure, invest in education, and invest in connectivity.
Absolutely.
Invest in response and management. And after that, always when you think not about one disease, but when you build the system, when the money is there, how the response to that disease will be integrated in a future big response we have to the entire health sector, then you build the entire health sector with each at each step.
It's great to hear how you're looking at the whole picture of the health sector and beyond and how it all fits together. I think there's so much work that's very siloed, very narrow, like one particular application, one particular diagnostic, one particular program. But really, the job of a government, the job of a country is to strengthen the whole thing.
Really apply the principle that the win of today have to serve the future, not to be a trap for the future.
Yeah, because it's not just about the easy win today. Yeah. It's about setting up the systems that can expand as time goes on. You mentioned you have a lot of positive experiences with technology as well, and I've heard of some of the ways in which you've broken new ground in terms of bringing innovative approaches and new technologies into healthcare work. Could you share one or two personal stories of ways in which you've experimented with new technologies or new technologies that you've seen transform Rwanda's healthcare sector?
Creating an epidemiological record system that we could trust. Or we had people record, let's say, for example, all fever were recorded, malaria, etc. So we invest a lot, but not necessarily in what killed the people. So connect the epidemiologic record to the reality of the country and use that as the basis to create the national response of the Ministry of Health. Meaning, respond really to the reality, not to... I remember when I started, we had a level of HIV record 13%. We didn't know where it came from, but that was in our book, and that's how we had that at UNAIDS. So we say, we don't know where it came from, but we are going to act, and as soon as possible, do a national survey. And that's how in 2005, we did the first national survey when there was a demographic and health survey. You know, it is a big survey you do every 5 years in countries. We added HIV and we were among the first to do that. And we found 3%. We were scared. We said, no, there is a mistake. So we obliged everybody to count.
Do it again. Go back. Double check.
Yeah. So, because all this is so crucial, because it will be the place where you invest the money to decrease the risk of the population, to the risk of morbidity and mortality of the population. So you cannot make such a mistake. And when we had this discrepancy, but we just understand that how it was done before was very questionable. And before it was done, you know, people coming, parachute from Geneva, UNAIDS coming and get out with this number, and nobody questioned it. But the methodology was not necessarily good, and the representativity of the population was not very good. What we conclude is that they went to the people who are the most at risk, like the prostitutes, the sex workers, etc., and this chain bias, the result of all the nation. But when you go to, you take a good representation of all the strata of the society, it was 3%.
Wow, that's wild. I love that you leveraged the demographic and health survey, which is the gold standard for health data in a country. You piggybacked on the expertise, on the methodologies there in order to get solid HIV data. And then in your role as a healthcare leader, as later on Minister of Health in Rwanda, you needed that data to make decisions about where you allocate your budget. So it's very real. It's very tangible.
And more than that, it's needed for us over time to evaluate if we're good or not.
Yeah. To hold
that's
yourselves accountable.
More important, our policies, our strategies, our plan, our activities, our connection with the people, good enough to see a decrease in prevalence in the population, and also our response to the disease, good enough to keep the people who are sick alive with a good life. So data are crucial. You cannot do anything without accurate data.
Yeah, in a way, it's a way of imagining a more accountable government service or public service. You know, now we can actually talk to any individual in a community. We can actually get feedback on what's working, what's not, in a way that hasn't been possible in history before now. And that creates the opportunity for a more responsive public sector government service than has ever existed before. So we're in a unique space to seize that opportunity.
It allows us to really implicate people in their own health. What is the right? The right to health, not to be healthy, but it's the right to participate and to have the maximum the leaders can offer you according to the situation of the world and the financial situation of the country. So it allows all this, having good data allow all this. And also, it allowed to see, to compare with sister countries. If you get more results with this process, let's see together how I can implement it, how I can improve what I'm doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you face any resistance whenever you create more visibility? Often there's always somebody that's hiding in the shadows, you know, that benefits from poor data. Like I could imagine maybe the data was wrong because people were trying to get more funds for, you know, a higher disease benefit than actually existed.
We saw that, but there is something good with the leadership in Rwanda. It's for truth. And don't try to tamper for anything.
Nice.
And also, we had the proof that even by giving the real data and the advocacy to get enough money from inside the country or from outside the country, from foundation, etc., it is not linked. Being honest, transparent, and fighting corruption is far more important to attract money.
That's a great example for other countries to follow. Dr. Binagwaho, you have a history of engaging with social media and specifically with Twitter in a way that most African leaders and ministries of health have never done before. Can you just reflect on that experiment that you ran? You used to be quite vocal and have a dialogue on Twitter, if I imagined. How did that start? Like, what was, how, tell me about that.
It started first by there was wrong rumors that were going against Rwanda on media, on journal, etc. So I decided to answer. It was not my duty, because, but you know, I'm writing a lot. And so I decided to answer. And there was also on Twitter, we emasculate a portion of the population. It's another type of, it was nonsense, but it was there out. So answering that. And by answering that, I start using the social media and I had fun.
It's a scary world. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I had fun because give you an example. The annual report of Gavi and UNICEF said Rwanda vaccinated 80% of the young children. I knew it was more.
No. Wow. Really?
It was about 90.
That's so incredible.
I remember it was a Friday night and one of the assistants told me, did you see what they say? And I was so mad. He said, but it's not so bad. Bad. Because now that this is the UN report, the day I will say it's wrong, we vaccinate more than 90, the liar will be me, not the UN for the world. So I start calling the head of UNICEF. I remember it was a Friday and it was night. And I called the head of Gavi and I was mad. But for them, we were so good, they didn't understand why I was mad about. I say, I'm going to tell my anger on social media. They say, no, you cannot.
Oh,
and I say, I can't, you'll see. And I start Friday night around 11, a war on the level of vaccination. And I just start with a lot of fun saying, the UN and Gavi say that we vaccinate only 80% of Rwanda kids. I know it's more. Maybe they want us to adopt some kids in Congo and in Burundi, I'm ready to.
That's awesome.
Yes. They say, please stop. You forgot I'm a minister. I've said, the weekend I'm a citizen.
You can speak in your own capacity.
Yes, can speak. And I won't make them ridicule. Because I say, maybe they should go back because I understand their mistake. They have a projection of fertility in Rwanda. So we are supposed to have this number potential of Rwandans, young, that should be vaccinated. But because of good family planning, we got less children to vaccinate and they don't make the difference. They don't know that when you take family planning correctly, you don't produce the kids. So, and it was so good that within a week, they came to evaluate. If we had done the complaint through the Minister of Foreign Affairs to the Prime Minister, Minister of Foreign Affairs, going to Geneva, going on. It will have to take 6 months, and they will say we'll do another one next year, and this will remain there. They came within a week.
Wow.
Because I say, I believe they need to all go back to primary school because it's so obvious, et cetera, et cetera. So they came and they say, please, you should stop. You know, you are a minister. I say, no. And say, they're in front of me. I was tweeting. And maybe they have started to revisit the primary school. Mathematics, they are ready to understand. I say, please stop. I say, and stop the day you stop. And, you know, they evaluate, it was 93%.
Wow, that's incredible. That's incredible work, Dr. Benelgo. Yeah.
And also an incredible bad reporting that can question the world report those organizations are doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I can imagine that you put so much effort into this. This is work and your blood, sweat, and tears of your team to make this happen. Like, you deserve and knowing also, what you achieved, the world knowing that.
Yes, but also that we pretend we vaccinate 90% of the kids. UNICEF come and said they vaccinate 80. Who the world is going to trust? UNICEF. Mm. So they're going to doubt of all our data. It's beyond vaccination. And they will say, either they lie, either they don't know how to collect data, whatever, we cannot trust them.
Oh, wow.
So you will spoil all the health sector data collection, data use.
Yeah. Because there's one aspect of data, which is people think data is pristine, it's objective, but ultimately there's the belief in the data, there's the credibility of it, and you know your processes. You know,
absolutely.
You know, you have that visibility, that transparency, that openness. And so creating a forum, like galvanizing them into action to look and be like, oh, yes, like we actually know what we're doing here in Rwanda. We gathered the data better than UNICEF did. It was something that you made happen by taking
also,
to the streets.
We did experience that, like, it was undermining the African capacity to manage a health sector. You know, today, I will say white supremacy.
We have another podcast on that one.
You got the point, because it was really insulting. They found no mistake in our collection, but they keep the numbers. Then numbers were given. You know, we called a meeting, and I was even not minister at that time. I was permanent secretary. So we called a meeting, and I had a very polite minister, etc., who showed them they are wrong. The people based in Rwanda didn't want to contradict the people based in New York and Geneva.
So power politics.
Nothing. Yes. Yeah. So it changed nothing. That's how I start to make them ridicule globally through social media. And this changed in less than a week. They came and they changed the data. But also, it needs you to have good data, good books, because we tell them, we are going to take, you know, this flechette, land there and do it yourself, and we will bring you in a car tomorrow morning. We go there and you see how we collect. They did three like that, and it was exactly like we did.
That's amazing. One of the things I like, you're talking about your experiences leveling the playing field, as it were. There's that emphasis on strong, transparent, open data systems that contain the truth.
Yeah.
And also there's the power of an open platform for discourse. Like what you achieved with Twitter and the Twitter example that you gave is creating a space for you as a Rwandan leader to speak up to the global community and to be heard. And Twitter has its issues for sure, but that's an important thing.
The most important for me was each citizen was able to reach me anytime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and when,
directly.
And when they have this opportunity, suddenly they feel more comfortable and trustful.
You're a human.
Because they know, if there's a problem, I can join. I will be listened to through that platform. Then the trust came.
That's it. That's all that we have for today. I hope you enjoyed our chat with Dr. Binyagoho on the importance of interoperability, the use of electronic medical records, public sector accountability, social media, and global power politics. And I'm just going to acknowledge we only touched on one very specific lens of Dr. Binagoho's work. This woman is a powerhouse. During her 5 years as Minister of Health in Rwanda, the average life expectancy across the country increased by an astonishing 2.5 years. She's expanded the definition of what health and wellness is through her work at the University of Global Health Equity. And she's not slowing down. Last year, she published a piece in the Annals of Global Health called Eliminating the White Supremacy Mindset from Global Health Education. Damn, that caused a stir and forced the global health community to take a long, hard look at itself in the mirror. If you'd like to read it yourself or see some examples from her other prolific writing, check out our show notes at aidevolved.com. And thanks for joining us today. If you like what you heard, please leave us a positive review or connect with us on LinkedIn, because I've just given up on Twitter. Last but not least, have a great summer, have a great winter, or whatever you have, wherever in the world you are, and wish me luck on my travels. I'll see you again in a couple of months.